Okay, this is the last period of the day, and I'll take questions and answers. And there's a question about what if we get itches while we're meditating, and what do we do with those? The answer is to try not to scratch them. And eventually the itch will fade away on its own. Even though you might be tortured for a lot longer than you would like, it will go away again, I promise. And 100%, it will 100% go away. So it is kind of like a game of self-discipline to not scratch it. And what I would suggest is wherever the scratch is, pay attention to the body part farthest from that place, okay? So if your ear's itching, pay attention to your foot, you know, on the opposite side or whatever. Like, just try to ignore that itchy area. You're allowed to do that. You don't have to put your attention right where the itch is, which would torture you all the more if you weren't going to scratch it. Yeah, and you know what else? You can also put your awareness on, like, the space in the room. I never really mentioned that today, but that is a valid object of meditation. And I like to use that one a lot, actually, personally. It's not mentioned so much by meditation teachers, you know, monks such as myself or other monks. But the Buddha does teach this. The so-called element of space, it's called in Buddhism, in Theravada Buddhism. Like, I'll just digress a bit here. One of the less taught objects of meditation is the so-called four elements, which is earth, air, fire, and water. So something you can meditate on if your mind's very squirrely, this is a good one for that. Earth, you sort of feel the solidity of your body. That's sort of earth. You know, your sort of corporeal solidity of body is earth. Air is anything to do with movement. So even your breathing in and out would be air element. Or even the motion of your torso expanding and contracting, that's also air element. Any motion is air element. If you were doing walking meditation, just the motion of walking, that would even be called air element. It's kind of a Hindu way of seeing things, is that motion is associated with this air element. It's more like just a concept, you know. Okay, then there's fire. And that has to do anything to do with temperature, whether you're feeling hot or even if you're feeling cold. That too is fire element. It's just temperature in general. How cool do you feel? Maybe your feet are cool, but your head is hot. You know, you can feel the difference. That's fire element.
He used to meditate on fire as well, right?
Who?
The Buddha. Like when he was a fire.
Well, he had a past life or a number of past lives where he was a fire worshiper. Yes, he wasn't a Buddhist monk yet. He was not the Buddha yet. He tried a whole bunch of spiritual practices,
yeah,
including fire worship. Yes,
yeah.
And they didn't lead to Nibbana, so he kept looking. Yeah. Okay, and then water. The water element is. It is like a combining thing. So like it's a binding agent, you could say. So try to feel the solidity of your body and the motion, the air, you know, the breathing, and temperature all at once. That's water. Okay, you're combining all three. It's like, yeah. And if you switch between those four things, that gives you something to do. It's a way to use your mindfulness. And it kind of keeps your mind engaged. It keeps your mind busy. Which element am I on again? Oh, yeah. Earth. Okay. Oh, I can feel the solidity. Okay. Air. Then you, like, you know, you feel your breath. Fire. And you kind of do each one for, I don't know, 10 seconds, 20 seconds, and move to the next one. And you know, it kind of gives you a task to do. You move between these four elements. That's a great one if your mind's very squirrely. Because it's an active thinking exercise. You know, you move through this list of four things over and over again. Not only does the Buddha teach these four elements, sometimes he expands it into a list of six elements. So there's those first four, just the same, earth, air, fire, water. But then there's the element of space, which is just like a sense of the space around you. It's just a, there's nothing, you know, really kind of supernatural to this, or this isn't really any kind of psychic power. It's just a feeling of the space around you. You just have a sense of the volume of space around you. It could be just a little area around your body, as though there were like a bubble around you. You just feel that space, or maybe the whole room. Or could you maybe feel the space in this entire building? That sense of space can get bigger and bigger. Maybe this whole lot that we're on, this whole property, can you feel a sense of all that? Or maybe like the whole city, or the whole country, or the whole planet. You can move up. How about the whole solar system? How about the whole universe? The sense of space can range out to these differing amounts of space. Anyway, that's a great one instead of being tortured by your itch. Okay?
Got it.
Yeah. I totally love, the sixth element is consciousness itself. So this is another one of those like super trippy things in Buddhism is this conscious experience you're having, it's highly tempting to identify with that as being you or yourself or your soul. But Buddhism's like, no, that is just an element. That is just a phenomena which is occurring. This very conscious experience you're having now is just a phenomena which is playing out according to the past causes and conditions that came before. You know, the fact that your mother gave birth to you, you know, back when you were born. And because you never died between then and now, you know, you're alive right now. You know, you ate food, you had what you needed to live, you were nurtured by your parents, you were raised, you were taken care of, etc. And now you have your own lives, you take care of yourselves. Owing to all these causes and conditions, this conscious experience we're having is happening. Okay? But in an ultimate sense, it's just a conditioned state that keeps occurring. It is entirely owing to the causes and conditions that came before that it happens. In Buddhism, there is no God who waved his wand and made this happen. He didn't make your soul. It is just a phenomenon which occurs. It is entirely impersonal. It is just as impersonal as like a stone or a stump is out in the yard. It's just, in an ultimate sense, it is bereft of self. Just like a stone has no self, or a stump has no self. It's just an element. Your consciousness is just an impersonal phenomenon which is occurring. So if this intrigues you, and I hope it does, please do more investigating around this concept of anatta, which is like probably the deepest, most profound teaching of all Buddhism, I'd say, is anatta, or not self. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this element of consciousness heavily partakes of it, of this anatta thing. Yes, we are having a conscious experience. I don't deny this. You know, and, you know, we're not robots. We have feelings. We are humans, okay? We, you know? I'm not saying take this so far that you don't even think of yourself as a human who thinks and feels and has, you know, emotions and stuff. Don't go that far. Don't depersonalize to that level. That wouldn't be good, you know? Like, it would be wrong if somebody in the audience, you know, let's say there was another man in the audience who's not actually here right now, but let's pretend there's another man in the audience and he's like, oh, so Venerable Subro, you know, it's entirely owing to causes and conditions, eh? And I'm just kind of the same as a stone or a stump. And, suppose I pull out a gun and shoot you then. Because, hey, you're just like a stone or a stump, you know, you're just an element of consciousness. Like, it's impersonal, you know? And I'd be like, whoa. Don't do that, because I have feelings, and it would hurt if you shot me. No one likes pain. No one likes suffering. Don't go that far, you know. But there is a lot to be said for loosening this sense of self we feel, whereby we quit being so graspy in the way that we think and graspy in the way that we kind of inhabit our senses.
Our actions also shape our experience.
Yes, absolutely.
So if we have actions that are uncompassionate, they will create similar consequences for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like there is such a thing as making karma.
Yeah.
And there is such a thing as making bad karma, where we would hurt somebody. And you know, that's totally a bad idea. Like there is such a thing as morality. And we you know, if we want our meditation to go deep, if we want to be skilled, you know, spiritual practitioners, morality must be put on the table. There's no avoiding it. And caring about the cause and effect of our actions can't be ignored. Or we will hold ourselves back from the progress we would like to have. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So yeah. So that's the sixth element then, is this element of consciousness itself. And it is impersonal in Buddhism.
And is one able to meditate on that?
Is one able to meditate on that? Yes. And I would call that a pretty high level object of meditation. And this can be, bliss can come ripping out of this one if you're good at it. You know, like you basically take into account your entire conscious experience, and then you see it as being, you see not self in it. Yes, it's occurring, but there's nobody there. There's nobody there, but yes, it's occurring. It's like this very trippy paradox, you know? Yes, we cannot deny that we're having a conscious experience, but it is simultaneously true in an ultimate sense that nobody is there. Like there, like you feel a sense of self, but that's just a feeling of a sense of self. That does not...
That's the nature of mind.
Right. Like, no permanent and eternal and invincible soul pops into existence simply owing to how you feel a sense of self. You know what I mean? Your sense of self is never more than that. It's always just a sense of self. And if you can shift your way of inhabiting your senses, and you can get it to an object of meditation where that sense of self drops away, peacefulness will arise concomitant with that. And you're actually going to find you're going to be a much happier person when you just set aside that sense of self. Okay? You didn't lose anything. You just shifted your perspective differently. The sense of self will come right back again as soon as you go back to your normal way of being and quit meditating, quit having an object of meditation. That sense of self will sort of reassert again. It's kind of like automatic when we do this, like I was saying earlier, kind of this name and form thing. It's like a subject-object way of seeing the world, kind of self and other way of seeing the world. Yeah. Hinduism has got something like this. They have this view that's like, oh, we are all one, you know, the universe is all one. And they sort of would have you, how can I put this? Go from seeing everyone as separate selves to viewing it as all one big self. There's like this one grand master self that we are all kind of part of, you know?
The Maha, whatever, right?
Yeah, well, they call this Atman. Atman. Yes. And yeah, it's sort of like the one big soul to which we all belong. That's Hinduism's view. And a senior monk I met not that long ago did a fantastic job of making a distinction between that Hindu view and Buddhism's view. Okay, so Hinduism was insightful and even praiseworthy to go from this sort of many selves or kind of many souls down to like a unified soul, you know, like a unity, a grand unity, this Atman. But Buddhism takes it a step further and says, no, 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 there isn't just one big soul. There are zero souls. You go from one to zero. It's all anatta. It is all bereft of any core, like an essence, like an eternal, unchanging, you know, core. That's like your soul. That's not found anywhere in this samsaric existence. Like anytime you're alive as any kind of a being, whether you're a human or a animal or a ghost or a deva, like an angel or a god or a hell being or whatever, like no matter what plane of existence you're in, and Buddhism has all these, you know, planes of existence. It is all due to causes and conditions that you went to that plane of existence. It all had to do with like, what was your morality like? It had to do with, well, how much did you meditate or not? It all had to do with your karma that you made. It all had to do with how you acted. It all had to do with like, what were your views? What did you believe? It all had to do with what kind of thoughts you would habitually think a lot, you know? And it's owing to those causes and conditions that you took birth wherever it was you took birth. Okay? So the ship, as it were, is being steered around between these planes of existence based on those causes and conditions. And it is subject to change. It is subject to flux.
It's like the water can either be in your glass or in the sky.
Yes.
You know, and causes and conditions.
Right.
May it turn it to rain or turn it to vapor or...
Right.
It could be in any of these places.
Sure. Like it can move to different places, different states. Yes, due to causes and conditions. But the water has no soul. Okay? So in the same way, we are this process. Okay? Don't think of yourself as this... Here's a great way to frame it. What is tempting to do is to think of ourselves as like a noun, okay? Like, I am me, I am a man, I am a monk, I am a person, I am a Canadian, I am a this, that, and the other thing that I identify with. And those are all nouns. But more skillful is to see it as a verb, okay? A doing, a becoming.
Human being.
Yes, a changing process, a changing process. And just how you change and just where you go in this life and future lives heavily is impacted on morality. What kind of karma we make? What kind of thoughts do we think? How do we act? We are the captains of our own ship in that sense. Okay, now we don't have utter and total control over everything in our lives, of course. You know, there are other actors on the stage of our life, you know, who have an impact on us, you know, like let's say bosses or significant others or, you know, the people, you know, there are a number of other influences on your life, but the moral dimension is something we have responsibility over. Others will influence us, sure. Don't get me wrong, you know, if you hang out with not so moral people, their habits are likely to rub off on one, eh? There is that osmosis effect. So, you know, we are not utterly the captains of our ship, but by and large, we are the captains of our ship. And we should live as though that's the truth. You know, we should own up to the responsibility of how we think, how we act, etc. And try to make the best of where we steer ourselves in life and future lives. So see it. Or at least I should say the Buddhist view then, the Buddhist perspective is we are a changing process. There is no eternal soul. It's just kind of like, what state are you in now? What state are you in now? Where are you going? What will happen next? Yeah, it's all a changing state. It's all a bunch of changing processes. So it's like verbs. It's like processes, not nouns, not things. Okay? So, you know, conventionally, this is a water bottle. Conventionally, this is a thing. Okay? But in an ultimate sense, well, it's a process. You know what I mean? If we look at that water bottle 10,000 years from now, maybe it'll have totally biodegraded and turned into a number of different chemicals, and the water's long gone. It's, you know, evaporated, gone somewhere else. It is ultimately a process. Mm-hmm. If we just look at it with the right perspective, you know, whatever, on the scale of thousands, tens of thousands of years, or whatever, however long it takes for that to biodegrade. It, you know, the ultimate truth is it is a process. But conventionally, it is a thing, because I'm going to drink some water out of it today. You know, it is effectively just a thing for our utilitarian use for today, you know? Yeah. So there is kind of a conventional sense where we do relate to each other like we all have selves, and we speak that way, you know? Like, Marty, can you please pass the chocolate or whatever, you know? There's a conventional level we still speak at, no matter how much we meditate. We still, you know, I'm not going to say like, oh, changing process sitting over there. Will you hand me the changing process chocolate? You know, like, no, you know, that'd be silly, right? Yeah, like there's a conventional way of speaking that we use, but as spiritual practitioners, it's our job to kind of, at the same time, learn to see this deeper truth of things. Okay, like this consciousness element. That's a high level kamatana, yeah. Like you basically fathom this paradox that yes, this conscious experience is happening, but there's nobody there at the same time. There is no soul having this experience. It's just processes having this experience. But I'm not like a robot, you know. I have feelings too, you know. But it's processes, yeah.
And this process can die and go to heaven.
Right. This process can still suffer if it does stupid things. Yes.
And it can experience wonderful things if it does good things.
Exactly. But yeah. Still,
and there's like the beings that people worship, they're also
processes
yeah. that are having the same experience we are.
Yes.
In a different place.
Yes, that's an interesting distinction. Yeah, other beings are also processes. So, you know, here we are in this Queen's House of Retreats is actually like a Christian kind of a facility, right? Although they are graciously allowing us to use the, you know, this room, and no one's giving me any flack about being a Buddhist monk, and I'm grateful for that. Now, Buddhism acknowledges the existence of gods, multiple gods, and like kind of angelic sort of beings. And the Christian god Yahweh can totally be one of those gods. Buddhism doesn't have a problem with this. You know, Buddhism can be like, oh yeah, that's just one of the gods. And you know, he's actually really cool. He has this much benevolence and love and power and whatever. And we're okay with that. But Buddhism would have a little bit of a bone to pick saying, we're not quite willing to concede though that that is an eternal god. Perhaps super long lived, yes. Like an incredibly long lifespan. It could be eons long. Yahweh might have a lifespan of eons, many eons. But eternal, truly eternal, like I mean infinite lifespan, truly infinite lifespan. No, we don't concede that point. We would say all gods, bar none, they do have a limited lifespan. But it might just be, mind-bogglingly long. But after that lifespan's over, they will take rebirth somewhere else in this universe. They might be a different god next, or maybe a human, or you never know, animal, ghost. They can go straight to hell even next. If they've got some bad karma that's still kind of, you know, they got some nasty kind of skeleton still in their closet from past actions, eh? Yeah, which still have to be reconciled. Yeah. Anyway, we're getting into Buddhist cosmology here, but it is interesting. Yeah, so, you know, So I'm not really feeling any conflict of interest by being here at this Christian place. I'm like, oh yeah, you know that that silence room they have over there? Oh, I love that room. Whatever they put in there, wow, it makes the energy so nice in there. Yeah. Feels good to be in there. You know, I'll concede that. That's I'll appraise that even.
I love that about Buddhism. It actually explains why all the other religions work as well.
Yeah, well, each of these religions can have a God that is a real God. Mm-hmm. But what we are not willing to concede is that that God is the center of everything. Okay? That God is just one of the players on the stage of this universe. But they're not the ultimate focal point, the ultimate center stage, you know, nucleus of worship, you know, the utter total focus of all everything. No, we don't concede that. And we don't concede they have eternal lifespans, but they can have all sorts of psychic powers. They can have all sorts of ability to even manifest things, create things. Sure. Buddhism acknowledges like creator gods. Yes. You know, there's a number of gods with differing powers in Buddhism. Some have less power, some have more. There's a whole pantheon, or, you know, of this. And there's actually, if this sort of thing really interests you, there is an ebook I can, a free for distribution ebook that kind of surveys the Buddhist views on this. A really good, a well done ebook, just stating what the views are of Buddhism. And it you know, it's very impartial. It's not trying to shove this down anybody's throat. It's like, this is what the suttas say. Yeah. Take it or leave it. You know, do with this as you will. Yeah. It's just kind of what the religion asserts, you know? Yeah. Okay, well, it is 5. So maybe I will just kind of wind it up. And this all came from a question on itching. It was a great question. Okay. All right. So much appreciated, everybody who came. And I'm now starting to put move the gears towards 4th of June. Okay. All right.